This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for June 2017. Well, to be honest, we don't get very dark nights during June. There's a definition of what's called astronomical twilight, which is really before it gets really dark, and that is defined to end when the sun gets to 18 degrees below the horizon. And in fact, from the UK, that never happens during June. I was at a star party towards the end of May, and in fact, astronomical twilight both ended and began again almost instantaneously at around 1 a.m., which of course is around midnight at UT. Anyway, there are still things to look at. So let's now have a look at the planets. Jupiter. It's now 2 months after opposition, but it still dominates the late evening sky, shining the south to southwest after nightfall. It sets at around 3 a.m. BST as June begins, and by about 1 a.m. at its end. As the month progresses, its brightness falls from -2.3 to -2.0 magnitudes, whilst the angular size falls from 41 to 37 arc seconds. It lies in Virgo, some 11 degrees to the west of Spica, Alpha Virginis, and halts its westward retrograde motion on the 11th of the month, as it begins to initially, slowly, move eastwards back towards Spica. It passes Spica on September the 11th, on its journey towards the lower parts of the ecliptic. Next year, sadly, it will only reach an elevation of some 25 degrees when due south, and for the following 2 years, just 18 degrees, before it begins to move back towards the more northerly parts of the ecliptic, when we obviously get better views. Even so, in the next few weeks, with a small telescope, one should easily be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere, sometimes the great red spot, we spotted that the other night with a 4-inch telescope, and up to 4 of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Well, Saturn. Saturn comes into opposition, that's when it's highest in the sky and due south around midnight UT, about 1 o'clock BST, and that's on June the 11th. It will be visible, of course, throughout the short night. It shines at magnitude 0.1 all month with an angular size of 18.3 arc seconds. The rings, with an angle of 26.5 degrees to the line of sight, are virtually as open as they ever can be. And again, it's sad that Saturn, now lying in the southern part of Ophiuchus between Sagittarius and Scorpius, only reaches an elevation of some 17 degrees above the horizon when due south, so hindering our view of this most beautiful planet. If imaging Saturn or Jupiter, Registax 6 has a tool to align the red and green and blue colours to largely remove the atmospheric dispersion from the image. And at a cost of somewhat over £100, one can purchase the ZWO Atmospheric Dispersion Corrector, which uses two contra-rotating prisms to carry out an even better correction. And that, of course, can be used for visual observations as well. Mercury is lost in the glare of the sun for most of the month before it makes a modest evening apparition in July. It might just be spotted with binoculars very low in the west after sunset at the very end of the month. Please, of course, do not use binoculars until after the sun has set. Well, following a 2-year-long apparition, Mars finally slips into the sun's glare in the first week of June. Well, I suppose, if you try hard, its salmon pink disk might just be picked out in the west northwest. Now, Venus is now a morning object, visible in the east before dawn, reaching its greatest elongation, that's 46 degrees west of the sun, on the 3rd of June. Its magnitude dims slightly during the month from -4.5 to -4.2, whilst the angular size shrinks from 24 to 18 arc seconds. However, at the same time, the illuminated phase, the parts illuminated by the sun, increases from 48 to 62%, which explains why the magnitude does not drop too much. Even though after the 3rd, it'll be moving back towards the sun. As the angle of the ecliptic to the horizon increases at this time of year, its elevation before sunrise will actually continue to increase until August. What about the highlights? Well, in early June, it's still worth viewing Jupiter. Though past its best, you'll see it in the south to southwest after sunset. It's moving down the ecliptic and lies in Virgo. And as I said, it reaches an elevation of about 36 degrees when crossing the meridian. An interesting observation is that the great red spot appears to be diminishing in size. Although I have to say, when I took an image of Jupiter with a red spot more or less on the meridian, it actually didn't look too small. At the beginning of the last century, it spanned 40,000 kilometres across, but now appears to be only about 16,500 kilometres across, less than half the size. The shrinking rate appears to be accelerating, and observations indicate that it's now reducing by 580 miles per year. I wonder if it will eventually disappear. June is the best month to observe Saturn, which reaches opposition on the 14th of June. So it will then be due south and highest in the sky around midnight UT or 1 a.m. BST. Held steady, binoculars should enable you to see Saturn's brightest moon, Titan, at magnitude 8.2. And a small telescope will show the rings with a magnification of 25 times or more, and one of 6 to 8 inches aperture with a magnification of times 200, coupled with a night of good seeing, will show Saturn and its beautiful ring system to its full glory. The thing that makes Saturn stand out, of course, is its ring system. The two outermost rings, A and B, are separated by a gap called Cassini's division, which should be visible in a telescope of 4 or more inches aperture, if the seeing conditions are good. Lying within the B ring, but far less bright and difficult to spot, is the C or crape ring. Due to the orientation of Saturn's rotation axis of 27 degrees with respect to the plane of the solar system, the orientation of the rings, as seen by us, changes as it orbits the Sun, and twice each orbit they lie edge onto us, can hardly be seen. This last happened in 2009, and now, having opened up, currently at an angle of 26.5 degrees to the line of sight, they're essentially as open as they ever will be. And from around the end of this month, the ring's orientation will begin to narrow until March 2025, when they will then appear edge on again. June is a nice month to find the globular cluster in Hercules and also spot what's called the double-double in Lyra. The two constellations are rising in the east after sunset, and by the time it gets dark, they're fairly high in the sky. Two-thirds of the way up of the right-hand side of the four stars that make up the keystone in the constellation Hercules is M13, the best globular cluster visible in the northern sky, looking like a fuzzy glow in binoculars. And just to the left of the bright star Vega in Lyra is the multiple star system called Epsilon Lyrae, often called the double-double. With binoculars, a binary star is seen, but when observed with a telescope, each of these two stars is revealed to be a double star, hence the name. In late June, as a result of the Sun being relatively low below the northern horizon, it's a very good time to spot non-delucent clouds. They're also known as polar mesospheric clouds, and they're most commonly seen in the deep twilight towards the north from our latitude. They are the highest clouds in the atmosphere, basically ice crystals, I suspect, at heights of around 80 kilometres or 50 miles, normally too faint to be seen. They are visible when illuminated by sunlight from below the northern horizon, whilst the lower parts of the atmosphere are in shadow. So, on a clear dark night, as light is draining from the northwestern sky, long after sunset, take a look towards the north, and you might just spot them. They look very beautiful, actually. So a few minor things. On June the 3rd, in the evening, the waxing moon will lie less than 2 degrees up and to the right of Jupiter. Around midnight on the 8th, 9th of June, the four Galilean satellites line up on one side of the giant planet. Well, we have one meteor shower this month, the Lyrid meteor shower, best seen on the nights of June the 15th to 16th. It reaches its peak on that date with a rate of about 18 meteors per hour seen at the zenith. That's not too many. And as the moon is close to third quarter, it may actually be rather hard to spot one. And as the name suggests, the radiant is very close to the star Vega. many meteors were seen from the shower in the late 1960s, but the peak hourly rate has dropped off markedly since then. If clear, it may well be worth aiming to see if you can spot one. On the 21st of June before dawn, Venus will be seen some 4 degrees above a very thin, waning crescent moon. And in late June, around midnight, comet 2015V2 Johnson will be actually visible below Arcturus as it crosses across Virgo. And on the night sky page, I've given a chart to show you where to have a look. It's closest, in fact, to the sun on June the 12th, 1.64 AU, so it would be best to see then, except, of course, that's very close to full moon. The moon. I like to point out something interesting. On June the 3rd and the 16th, the Alpine Valley is close to the terminator, and so a good time to be observed. So they're two good nights to observe an interesting feature should you have a small telescope. Close to the terminator on those nights, 3rd and 16th, lies the Apennine mountain chain that marks the edge of Mare Imbrium. Towards the upper end, you see a cleft across them, which is called the Alpine Valley. It's about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. A thin rill runs along its length, but that's quite a challenge to observe, and I frankly have never seen it. Nearby is the dark crater Plato, and also below the young crater Copernicus. It's actually a very interesting region of the moon. Well, I do hope you have a chance to see some of the sights in the June sky, admittedly without too much time to do it. Oh, the night sky for June 2017. Well, what do we see in the heavens? Well, constellation-wise, the constellation of Leo the Lion is setting towards the western horizon after dark. And high in the south, the brightest object is the star Arcturus at the bottom of the constellation of Bootes. Up to its right is the Plough. In fact, the three stars that make up the handle of the Plough point down towards Arcturus quite nicely. The central star of those three stars making up the handle you see with binoculars as a double star, Alcor and Mizar. But then later, if you have a telescope, you can see that Mizar is itself a double. A nice little thing to have a look at. Over to the upper left of Arcturus, we begin to see the beautiful region of the sky that contains what's called the Summer Triangle. Below is the star Altair, in Aquila, the eagle. Up to the left is Deneb, the brightest star in Cygnus the Swan. And down to its right is Vega, the brightest star in Lyra. Those three stars make up what is called the Summer Triangle. If you look partway along, about a third of the way from Altair to Vega, when there's no moon, you actually cross what's called the Cygnus Rift, a fairly dark part of the Milky Way, and in front of it is a rather nice asterism called Brocky's Cluster, or the coat hanger, because it looks like a little coat hanger upside down. Over to the left of Altair is a very sweet constellation called Delphinus the Dolphin. You can almost imagine it leaping out of the sea.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for Antipodean listeners, here's Claire Bretherton with Night Sky Where You Are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the June Jodcast from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. This month we reach our winter solstice here in the Southern Hemisphere, when the south pole of the Earth is at its greatest tilt away from the sun. This means that the sun appears much lower in the sky, our days are shorter and colder, and our nights are longer. This year the solstice falls on the 21st of June, New Zealand Standard Time. Whilst always around this time, the actual date of the winter solstice can sometimes fall on the 22nd. This is because it takes the Earth approximately 365 1/4 days to go around the sun. But we don't count that extra quarter day in our calendars every year. We save them up for a leap year. So the timing of the solstice slips around 6 hours later each year until we add an extra day and it jumps back to the beginning again. The word solstice means sun stopped or sun still, because the sun rises and sets at its most northerly points of the year. As we move back towards the summer, the sun will gradually rise and set further and further south until it stops again at the summer solstice in December and begins the long journey back north. Whilst the cold weather at this time of year may not be so welcome, the long, dark nights provide a perfect opportunity to observe our beautiful southern skies. We're very lucky here in the southern hemisphere that we have a perfect view towards the central bulge of our Milky Way galaxy, so it appears broader and brighter across our sky. The centre lies towards the constellations of Sagittarius the Archer and Scorpius the Scorpion, which is now midway up our eastern evening skies. Scorpius is our winter constellation, and together with Sagittarius a little below, will be dominating our skies over the next few months. At the heart of the Scorpion is the bright orange-tinged star Antares, a red supergiant with a radius nearly 900 times that of the Sun. The name Antares means rival of Mars because of its distinctive colour, which tells us that it is a cooler star at around 3,500 degrees. Antares lies 550 light-years away and is amongst the 20 brightest stars in the nighttime sky. To the left of Antares is a line of stars now forming the Scorpion's claws, and further left still, the faint zodiac constellation of Libra, the Scales. Libra's two brightest stars form an almost vertical line in our evening sky, and have perhaps the best names of any I have seen, Zubin el-Ghanoubi and Zubin es-Shamali. Zubin el-Ghanoubi, the higher of the two, is halfway between Antares and Spica, at a distance of around 77 light-years. At magnitude 2.7, it enjoys the alpha designation, despite being slightly fainter than its beta counterpart below, probably because it lies just a third of a degree from the ecliptic. Using binoculars, you'll see that Zubin el-Ghanoubi is in fact a double star, with two components separated by around 5,400 AU, which is a little under 4 arc minutes on the sky, and which appear to be co-moving through space. Strictly speaking, the name Zubin el-Ghanoubi now only refers to the brighter of the two. Both components are spectroscopic binary stars in their own right, and there may also be a fifth component to the system, Ku Librae, located 2.6 degrees away. Below Alpha Librae is the slightly brighter Beta Librae, or Zubin es-Shamali, at magnitude 2.6, which lies 185 light-years away. Zubin es-Shamali is a hot blue main-sequence star, some 130 times more luminous than the Sun, and with twice the surface temperature. While stars of this type are often seen as white or bluish in colour, Zubin es-Shamali has often been described as greenish by observers, the only green star visible to the naked eye. Whilst theoretically this is not possible, scientists are still unsure why so many observers claim to see it this way. Whilst today these stars are part of Libra, the names Zubin el-Ghanoubi and Zubin es-Shamali derive from the Arabic for the southern claw and northern claw of the Scorpion, referring back to the ancient Greeks who saw these stars as part of the constellation of Scorpius. The idea of scales or a balance can be traced back to ancient Babylonians, though, some 4,000 years ago, at a time when the northern hemisphere autumnal equinox, where the sun crosses the equator from the northern to southern hemisphere, appeared in that part of the sky. The choice of scales likely relates to the balance between light and dark, with equal hours of day and night experienced at the equinox, as well as the change of seasons from summer to winter, and therefore hot to cold. The Romans revived the idea, seeing Libra as the scales of justice held by Astraea, the starry goddess, represented by the neighbouring zodiac constellation of Virgo. Virgo is currently home to bright Jupiter, sat a little to the left of the constellation's brightest star Spica, high in the northeast after dark. Below Scorpius is our second evening planet, cream-coloured Saturn, shining at magnitude 0 this month. Saturn reaches opposition on the 15th, when it will be directly opposite the Sun in the sky, and overhead at midnight. Saturn will also be at its closest to Earth around this time, making it appear at its largest and brightest, although in practice any difference will be hard to spot with the naked eye. Do take a look through a small telescope if you get a chance, though. This opposition, its rings will be almost at maximum tilt, so should be a wonderful sight. Here in New Zealand we don't have scorpions, so we see Scorpius as something a little more familiar in the southern Pacific. To Maori, this group of stars is known as Te Mātou o Māui, the fishhook of Maui, which he used to pull a great fish out of the ocean that became the North Island of New Zealand, Te Ika o Māui. Antares is known as Rehua, and represents a drop of blood that Maui took from his nose to use as bait. This constellation was an important aid for ancient Pacific navigators, as it travels directly overhead from our latitude. Once Te Mata o Maui was right overhead, it was simply a case of travelling east or west to find Aotearoa, New Zealand. By just before sunrise, Scorpius, or Te Mata o Maui, has moved to the west-southwestern horizon, with the hook pointing upwards. The morning skies at this time of year are particularly important here in New Zealand, as this is the time we celebrate Matariki, or Maori New Year. The timing of this celebration is based on the heliacal rising of the small group of stars known as Matariki or the Pleiades. Opposite Scorpius in the morning sky is his arch-enemy, Orion the Hunter, rising directly east with the three bright stars of his belt lying along the horizon. These are also known as Tautohu here in New Zealand. If you follow these stars along the horizon to the right, they point to Sirius or Takarua, the brightest star in the nighttime sky. Follow them to the left and you first come to a V-shape forming the head of Taurus the Bull, with the bright star Aldebaran marking his eye, and then to Matariki rising in the east-northeast. The Pleiades is, in fact, visible throughout most of the year, but it is only known as Matariki around this time. It disappears from our evening skies around April each year, before reappearing in the morning in early June. It is this reappearance or heliacal rising that tells us that the old year is coming to an end. The next new moon, or for some iwi the next full moon, marks the beginning of the new year. This year the new moon falls on the 24th of June and may be visible a day or two after this, so Matariki will officially be celebrated on the 25th of the month. In Maori mythology, Matariki, Tautoru, Takurua and Rehua form four po, or pillars, that hold Ranginui, the Sky Father, in the sky. Matariki supported one of Rangi's shoulders and marks the rising point of the sun at the winter solstice. Takurua, Sirius, supports the other shoulder and is the closest bright star to the sun's rising point at the summer solstice. These two stars represent the extent of the sun's movement throughout the year. Tautoru held Rangi's neck and marks a celestial equator which runs along the length of Ranginui's backbone. Pututurangi, or the star Alte, marks the other end. Over in the west, Rehua, or Antares, supports Ranginui's lower torso. A line drawn from Matariki to Rehua marks the ecliptic, the pathway of the sun, moon and planets through the sky. These four po form the basis of a celestial compass, a map of the night sky that was used to navigate the Pacific Ocean and bring our ancestors to Aotearoa. Today, Matariki is a chance for all New Zealanders to unite in celebration of this great land we all call home. It's a chance to reflect on the state of the planet we live on and the bounty that we receive from Mother Earth, to celebrate our shared history and to reflect on our very unique place in the universe. Nga mihi o te tohu ki a koutou katoa. Wishing you all a very happy new year from the team here at Space Place.